Welcome to East Meets West, episode 180. I'm Roger Chang. Tom, unfortunately, was struck down by illness and is unable to join us today. However, we do have a guest, Randy Jordan from The Instance and a couple of other podcasts. Randy, would you care to illuminate us on those other podcasts?
Sure. You know, The Instance is the world's best not selling World of Warcraft podcast, and do that with Scott Johnson, who has joined me and Brian Dunaway and Brian Ibbett just this week in starting a new venture. It's a show called Film Sack, where we're sort of dredging the bottom of the barrel at Netflix with their View It Now movies to find films that you can watch now that you just might not want to. We're having a lot of fun with that one.
You mind if I make one recommendation for your film queue in that regard?
Sure.
Watch a really bad movie. It's called Gangs versus the Dead or Gang of the Dead. Gang of the Dead, and it's basically these poser gangs that basically have to fight these homeless bum zombies that invaded their warehouse where they were doing a weapons transaction. So it's great. You have great lines like they're bums eating cops outside, and then you have really bad special effects and really over the top acting. It's perfect, I think.
We'll get it on our list. Our first episode covered Krull, which
was great. It has Liam Neeson.
He is in there. So is Hagrid, and all kinds of interesting things for you to see looking backwards 20 years. The amazing, well, 25 years now, I guess. I'm unbelievable. But the amazing thing about Krull for us was that every one of us had seen it when we were kids, and then we're watching it again. And just it's mind blowing what there is to learn as an adult looking backwards like that.
Now, you know, looking back on things from your childhood, do you sometimes wonder if you only liked things because, you know, you were a kid and that's what you liked, or because there was a certain something that kind of stayed with you as you got older that still like draws you in?
It's really hard to say. I know this film sack exercise is going to be a lot of just that. For example, our next episode coming this Thursday, we're also we're looking at a film that was released in 1984. So we're going from 83 to 84. And it's the same thing. It's a film that I saw when I was younger. Not exactly a kid's film, this next one, but you still have that same question. And it's a tough question to answer. It's easy to look at crap and say, that was crap, and I was just too immature to recognize it. But it's hard when you're out in the middle ground, like Krull. Krull's not a great film. Krull's not a bad film. It's got ups and downs. It's really hard to say whether or not I loved it as a kid just because I was a kid.
You know, one of the things that usually struck me about movies back then, especially sci-fi or fantasy movies, was the special effects or like, oh, wow, one of the Sinbad movies, a classic example with Ray Harryhausen's stop-motion animation. It used to draw me in like flies to, you know, flies to sugar. And, you know, just even seeing a little bit would make me want to see that movie, even if I didn't know what the plot was, what the story was, whether or not the acting was any good. All I knew was there was cool special effects. I had to see it.
Yeah. And what really makes me question is what kids who are 6, 8, 10 years old today are going to think about the films that they love right now 25 years from now. You know, when they look back on Surf's Up or the Ice Age movies, or, you know, I hate to just keep naming animated films, but it's hard to think of good live action films for kids nowadays that seem to all be animated. I just wonder if they're going to look back and say, boy, that was so dumb. Those Pixar movies didn't even look photorealistic or whatever.
Do you often find yourself like wistfully looking back and saying, oh, wow, that time period was so much more innocent? You know, when I was watching those movies, I was in a state of mind where, you know, good was good, bad was bad. There wasn't any kind of this gray area, and things seemed to be a lot simpler. And granted, a lot of that tends to be nostalgia, kind of, you know, pining for what used to be, because everyone does that. But, you know, it's sometimes I find things to be a little too cynical, and they could be age. But do you find that to be the case as you watch some of these older movies?
I do. In fact, I think the anti-hero doesn't come along in our history until not as a constant in films until the mid-90s. So there is sort of a barrier where when you look back before that, you're seeing, and a film like Krolla is the ultimate example, this guy manages to retrieve the greatest weapon imaginable by reaching into hot lava. And then the next thing that happens to him is some old dude tells him, you know, you can't use that. And then he doesn't for the whole film. He faces so many struggles and he doesn't use that weapon. And I keep thinking, if that movie had been made in the last 10 years, he would have so immediately used it and he would have hurt himself. That's the way they would have played it. You know, it's just a different time now.
Now, most people use movies as to bracket their specific age range. Like, you know, growing up, I used to watch a lot of John Hughes movies. And, you know, it wasn't because I wasn't in high school or old enough to appreciate, you know, the certain stories. But I remember seeing them. I remember Back to the Future as a kid. I remember, you know, Indiana Jones, all the, you know, the original Star Wars trilogy in the theaters. And that's how I bookend my life. Okay, you know, that was my youth. You know, my 20s, these movies, The Matrix, Lord of the Rings, those bookend, you know, that portion of it. And then as I get older, then I bookend, you know, that, you know, decade with a new group of movies. Do you have a set of movies that you think encompass your childhood from, like, you know, one in the, I don't want to date you or anything, but in earlier time periods?
You and I are about the same age. And so you just kind of did it for me as well. What always strikes me is how there are people who reach beyond their own years. You know, like you'll meet someone who grew up in the 80s watching 60s films. And I always find those people to be so fascinating. And it makes me think my kids are so going to face that. It may be a test of endurance, but I'm going to find a way to, and I know everybody says this, and so I always want to put out there, I realize that I'm probably wrong, but how cool would it be to raise your kids and set it up so that when they're 6, 7, 8 years old, they get to watch all the Saturday morning cartoons from the 80s? You know, I don't know. Maybe
you know, it's very interesting. You know, as a kid, when you look at things, you don't think of them as kitsch or nostalgic material to be used later on. However, when it does reappear, you feel a connection. Like, you know, what's the conjunction? Schoolhouse Rock's classic example. When it was used in Reality Bites, it was kind of a testament to the whole kind of Gen X thing. Oh, there's that touchstone content. There's that one piece that everyone can relate to. The same way people can relate to, you know, certain things. I don't remember if you had to do this in junior high, but to raise money, we had to sell magazine subscriptions.
Yep. Yes.
Go to do a lot of, and then, you know, you had things, you know, certain trends, for example, acid wash jeans, denim jackets, mullets, unfortunately.
I had one of those briefly.
And When you look back at these movies, do you start trying to find those things? Do you say, oh, yeah, I used to have one of those. Oh, I remember when so-and-so used to dress like that. Or, yeah, that my school dance was totally like that. Or, you know, yeah, I used to eat that in the cafeteria when I was going to junior high or high school.
I do. And I always I feel like it kind of takes away from good films when you're so busy, you know, admiring the things that you draw from your past in those things. You know, the John Hughes films are a great example. When you watch those, sometimes it's hard to catch the good writing, the clever acting by people who were in their early 20s and had no business being able to pull it off, because you're so busy looking at the fact that somebody's wearing, you know, Gerbeau jeans, and that's something that were so important to you when you were in seventh grade or what have you. But my question for you is, as a 30-something, what film?
30-something.
Well, I'm sorry.
No, that's fine.
Everybody's going to eventually be a 30-something. But at this time in your life, when you look back, let's just say 5 years, what in the last 5 years speaks to you? You know, and I don't mean like it entertains me because it's Lord of the Rings, but actually mirrors something, you know, emotional about your life. The way that, say, Ferris Bueller might have if you were 16 when that film came out.
You know, it's harder to find things like that, and I'm not sure if it's because as I got older, I tend to look past a lot of the kind of cliched elements. For example, you know, 30 something was the big thing, you know, TV show in the late 80s, 90s for our age group. I don't see that. I mean, I guess the closest would be The Office, I work in an office, and you know, there are people who do some of the things, not all the things that particular cast does, but there's not one thing I can honestly say that mirrors my particular life circumstances entirely. You know, there might be shows that do snippets of it. You know, The Big Bang Theory, I remember that kind of like, oh yeah, I used to do that, you know, in college or right as I rolled out of college. But it's not my entire life was like exactly like that. Yeah, snippets of it, portions, snapshots, but not
right.
The entirety of life.
Another example might be Scrubs. It's a ridiculous circumstance and a ridiculous way of living that they have, which is why it's a comedy. But they are our age, you know. They are, if we were nurses and doctors, they're exactly where we would be.
Now, you know, moving on, one of the things that I've noticed and it kind of annoys me is that a lot of Hollywood films and TV shows and in a lesser extent, you know, music, because music's all kind of derivative, so I'm less annoyed by that. But when they haul out old franchises to kind of flog them to an audience, Astro Boy, someone mentioned Astro Boy in the chat room. That's a classic example of something that, you know, was great as a kid. I don't really think they needed to make a movie based on it.
I felt the same way about G.I. Joe. As much as I liked the first film, I really felt the same way about Transformers. And my favorite example, though, I want to go contrary to you here, and that is Michael Mann made a tremendous Miami Vice film 2 years ago, and practically no one that I know saw it and can talk about it. But the fact is, it's possible to take junk, and it was junk. Miami Vice was not important 20 years ago. And revisit it and make it good, you know, make it really good. In fact, I would say the two fairly recent Scooby-Doo films were better than anything I remember watching when I was a kid as far as Scooby-Doo is concerned.
I must admit, I've only seen part of the first one because Sarah Michelle Gellar was in it, and that was pretty much it. Freddie Prinze Jr. has a really weird reaction on me in that anything he's in, I don't want to watch. But it's interesting, you know, now that you say that, do you think it's possible to take an older franchise? Because they did that with Battlestar Galactica is I think, you know, kind of the premier example of taking something that was relatively good and had a very, you know, standard storyline for that, you know, for that contemporary time period. And they kind of rebooted it and kind of re-scripted it for, you know, our period of time, which I thought was great because you didn't feel like you were being taken down, you know, memory lane. You were basically being given the same kind of universe that you enjoyed as a kid, but they've updated the elements to reflect the fact that the, you know, the age demographic is older, more sophisticated themes, personal issues, you know, even the cinematography was completely different than, you know, what Lauren Green had to do back when he did the original series.
I think Battlestar Galactica is the gold standard right now, but I also think it gives you a roadmap. And the roadmap to me reads, find something that was mediocre in its time and as a result of the passage of time is now awful. And there's a good starting point for you. And I think, you know, the Star Trek franchise is where this has been done over and over, you know. The original series was a little above average, but it wasn't incredible in its time. You know, it got better as time went on, but then all of a sudden the 80s came along and all this technology and communications came along and the original Star Trek franchise started to look kind of poor. And then someone got the bright idea of rebooting it and they were right to do so. And it I always, you know, troll around in my brain, what was good and then isn't so good anymore? And is the next thing. And I promise you, anything you come up with, someone's making a TV series or a movie right now. Anything you come up with.
A team. Oh, wait a minute. That's already being done.
Yeah. Exactly.
Oh, that better be good. That so better be good.
There's an Airwolf movie coming, I promise you. And you're going to have to, you know, punch yourself in the face and remember that helicopters are cool.
It could be. I mean, you know, look what they did with Blue Thunder. They took a pretty good, you know, movie and they turned it into a mediocre TV series.
Exactly.
Now, you know, one of the things that you do in your podcast, of course, is The Instance, which is the world of Warcraft. And one of the stories you actually sent to me, I thought was really interesting, was the Chinese MMO company that basically banned gender bender playing. So if you were a male, you could not play as a female.
I can't even stand calling it gender bending, because I've never heard that phrase before to describe so many people I know who are male and play a female avatar in whatever game they're playing. I mean, that describes 2/3 of everyone playing every MMO. I've never heard the phrase gender bending. It's just what people do. It's just what they do. That's it. It's not special. That's for sure. It might be a little different in China. There might be parts of the world where males are less likely to run around behind a female avatar. But I'm just blown away by the idea that a company would tell people they couldn't.
You know, it's kind of weird because, you know, having cut my teeth back in the day on Bard's Tale, Ultima, I mean, you had to create a roster of characters, and invariably they're going to be, you know, mixed gender, mixed species. So it doesn't seem so, you know, it doesn't seem like a very, you know, far-fetched thing to do, but I guess they're really concerned about the effect it might have on society at large, even though, from what I understand, majority of the Chinese population does not have access, or at least regular access, to the internet in any kind of personal, you know, playtime standard. So
look at it like Diablo 2. I mean, does that even fly in a place where you can't play two of the classes? Sorry, sir. You can't come onto the Diablo 2 server playing as an Amazon. That just I kept looking around for where the joke was. This is a satire, right? And then my wife reminded me that in Final Fantasy Online, you can't have a same-sex marriage. You cannot organize an in-game marriage with an avatar that is also of the same gender. They won't let you.
Like the game won't let you, or like are there like game GMs that go through?
No, in the game you have to do a marriage application and jump through some hoops, and it will not let you put in the names of two same gender avatars.
In your opinion, how much of real life is kind of replicated, at least in the way personal contact and relationships cross over into the kind of virtual on-game world? Because, you know, for a lot of people, this is the way they kind of interact with other people on a regular basis that doesn't involve people from work, you know, people they need to see, like, you know, the guys at the post office, at the bank, you know, people where they can kind of meet like-minded folks. And actually, you know, do something enjoyable without resorting to, you know, bugging a bunch of people at work. Say, hey, you want to play with me tonight?
It's very difficult to explain to someone who has not experienced it. You know, you get those questions about, well, what about your real friends? You know, how does it affect your relationships with your real friends? Most of the best real friends I've got, I don't see face-to-face on a regular basis. Now, I always encourage people, and I think this is really important as we keep driving into the 21st century and we're getting more and more in touch with people that we don't see regularly, set up the meetups. It's really valuable in this life to spend time in the physical presence of other people.
It's, you know, I was talking to Tom about this, and one of the things I've noticed is that with technology, it's very easy to kind of keep in contact over vast distances with either family members, friends. You either shoot them an email, you set up a Twitter account, and, you know, they catch your Twitters on a regular basis. But what I found is that it's, in some cases, it's even hard, at least in San Francisco, it's harder to kind of make a community connection to kind of talk to people next door, because, you know, either A, you're too busy, B, they're too busy, or, you know, you're time schedules, you know, conflict, because with technology, people can do so many different things that they weren't able to do, at least, you know, scheduling wise, or, you know, hey, let's go meet, you know, blah, blah, blah. You know, I'll set up an Evite and, you know, everyone show up.
Yeah, it is. I find it's very difficult, but I also think that if you're going to continue the trend that we're on, which is having a much wider worldwide circle of friends, that it becomes very valuable to keep an eye on your opportunities. And I hear about people doing these amazing things, like we're going to be traveling from here to there, and we're going to be, you know, missing, just we're going to be passing by someone by a space of 200 miles. Let's make sure that we find a way to stop and see them. And I actually I've come to have a circle of friends that I see once or twice a year. And I think that's wonderful. It's worth the effort, and it's worth the time. You know, those people that you worked with 10 years ago that you used to see every day and you used to go out and have drinks with once a week, every single week of your life, you haven't talked to any of those people in years. And so they're really not your friends anymore. But these people that you game with online, or, you know, you work like Scott Johnson and I work on podcasts together. We talk to each other every single week quite a bit. And we have become very close friends. You don't get to respond to that "what about your real friends" thing if that's all you've got, as far as I'm concerned. You have to take that one little extra step. And so Scott and I, we find a way to get together a couple of times a year, and then you've got it. And you don't have to be burdened by just you know, only ever hearing someone's voice over Skype.
All right. Do you want to go and look at our message boards on the pod or East Meets West pod website? Now, in the past show, we were talking about evolution, or actually rather, Tom was ranting about evolution and the fact that there are still people out there who will not submit to its all-encompassing logic. You know, we did get a couple of, actually we did get a very lengthy conversation going on the site at subbrilliant.com/EMW. You know, I'm actually with Tom on this, and I don't want to drag you into kind of a theological debate, but, you know, there's a time and place for spirituality, and there's also a time and place for logic, you know, to coincide, to kind of live side by side. But, you know, I think Tom was kind of hitting the nail on the head. It's like people are now taking, you know, whatever belief, be it religious, be it spiritual, political, any kind of really strongly held belief, and they will take it to absurd extremes, simply because they're so emphatic about it, or so, I don't know what the word is, they're so captivated by it that even when it could even be something, you know, as non-controversial as, you know, the name or the names used for a certain character in a TV series. You know, people are so emphatic about, you know, their positions that, you know, I've noticed people just kind of dig straight in and they will not budge, even if you give them proof that they're wrong.
This is one of the casualties of mass worldwide interconnected communications. And I think that we are a bit more struck by it because we've lived a life where growing up we didn't have the internet and we didn't have that, you know, 24-hour news struggling to get our attention over the other 24-hour news station. So putting on, you know, Nancy Grace screaming. Since we didn't have that, and then we did, it's very annoying to us. Whereas I think that people that are just maybe 10 years younger, I've noticed this among my nieces and nephew, for example, that they're not necessarily the next generation. They're just a little bit younger. They don't know anything other than the internet age. And they are so used to every, you know, post that they read on the internet being a screed against something that they just think that's how people talk. And I mean, there's good and bad about it, but I'm actually kind of glad for them, you know, that they don't turn on Nancy Grace and it doesn't make them want to go take 3 Xanax and a bottle of scotch. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. You know, it's, It's funny. I'm wondering if, you know, maybe it's the level of anonymity, or maybe it's because people have a keyboard and they maybe have a few more seconds to think about what they're going to type. But, you know, people come off as a lot more nasty than they would, I guess, in public. You know, if you have a friendly disagreement with someone, you know, you're not expecting them to haul out, you know, strange facts left and right, you know, just to kind of prove that you're, you know, you're in the wrong. You know, maybe it's because it's so insular that people feel that they can get away with it to some extent. I don't know.
And you're right about the anonymity thing. I can honestly say that on the subject of the importance of natural sciences and, you know, accurate science in our universe, on that subject, at least two of my best friends in the world completely disagree with me, completely. And I can tell you, we have never had a moment of pause because of that subject. But with the, you know, with my, these best friends of mine, when we understand how one another talk, when they read how I write online, for instance, they mm-hmm. know my tone and they know my pacing, and I'm not anonymous to them and they're not anonymous to me. And that is a huge difference. It cannot be understated. I think there is someone out there who's going to find a way to create an online community where you cannot be anonymous, where you have to be completely known, sort of exposed personally to the people with whom you're having discourse. And I'll bet you it's successful, and I'll bet you it's a very friendly place to be.
Oh, yes. I certainly agree with you on many of those points. Now, let me see. Time was meant. No. Wow, this
you know
thing
what?
Got...
I just noticed when Tom said he wasn't going to be on the show, he said he has the flu. You didn't say he had the flu. Tom Merritt said he had the flu.
Yes.
I'm kind of worried about the guy.
I'll only be worried if it proceeds to get worse over the next few days. I don't know. With the H1N1, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, you hear about it so often that you can kind of grow complacent. It's like, well, you know, they're talking about it again on the news. Don't really care. Until you see a story that affects either someone close by, like, you know, school children or something, then it feels a little closer home because, you know, until there's that kind of connection to you, it's kind of there's that disconnect. It might as well be on Mars because it's not going to affect me.
Yeah, and you know, in our World of Warcraft guild, I have a pretty good friend who has an acquaintance who has succumbed to swine flu just about a month ago, a woman in her 20s who died. And when that, you know, when that comes around, you realize, oh my gosh, it does make a huge difference. And I always question whether or not that sort of feeling that you get when you realize, wow, someone who's 26 years old just died from this thing. I question whether or not I am able to stay really rational, since we're talking about, you know, rational discourse, whether or not when I study, you know, for example, my wife is now 7 months pregnant. She's getting a swine flu shot, the inoculation tomorrow. I love saying swine flu, by the way, more than H1N1. I can't help it. You know, but she's getting the inoculation tomorrow. It's a practical requirement when you're 7 months pregnant, you know, at this time in our lives. And I have, you know, I have a lot to understand so that I'm fully comfortable with it. And I'm more scared than I would be if I hadn't known someone who knows someone who died of the thing in the prime of life.
That's it. I mean, you know, I'm still kind of against vaccinations, but in the case of the H1N1, I'd probably get one. However, from what I understand, there's such a limited supply that they're actually, and this is what I've heard so far, and it could be totally different now, that only those in the kind of the most susceptible should be the first ones to actually get inoculated. And then, you know, from there, kind of a triage where you get the people that would be most at risk and then work your way down from there. You know, when people were talking about this earlier, they were, you know, earlier in the year, There were a lot of kind of off the cuff comments. Well, yeah, you know, here's another pandemic and I haven't seen anyone die yet. It could be one of those things that slowly sneaks up on us because, you know, when we, people think of pandemics, they think of, you know, the Spanish flu, they think of, you know, cholera, they think of the plague, they think of mass, you know, tidal waves of illness befalling everyone, scores of people dead, you know, body bags everywhere. This could be something that, you know, stays with us and you know, cuts certain people down in the prime of their life over a long period of time. And to me, that's just as frightening because, you know, whether or not it's all at one time or over, you know, the span of 50 years, the same number of people, that's the same number of people that, you know, get struck. So I don't know. It's one of those things where you're wondering, you know, maybe the whole idea of everyone being able to get on a plane and flying, you know, 24 hours from one end of the planet to the other was such a good idea.
Exactly. And you're going to have, let's just, I don't hope this happens by any means, but let's just hypothesize that it gets worse. In the case that it gets worse, you're going to have some strange decisions to make in the next year. You know, in the case that it gets worse and we start hearing about a lot more people between the ages of, say, 20 and 60 dying from this thing, your decision making when you choose to travel is going to change. The fact that if it gets worse, you're going to face getting inoculated. You know, if over the next year, if this thing keeps going downhill, someone's going to come along and say, all right, we've now made enough of the thing for everybody to get the vaccination. Hey, Roger, if you go in right now to your local grocery store, you can get one. And we are suggesting that you should. You're going to have to make a decision that you're really not yet anticipating.
I mean, even simple things, because you know, when you deal with something that is kind of on such a population scale where it can be anyone and anywhere, you tend to kind of think, oh, maybe I shouldn't take that, you know, trip downtown to go to the supermarket. I'll go over here. A little more pricier, but you know what? Not as many people, probably a lower risk. You know, in many ways, it kind of mirrors the early 20th century when, you know, there were waves of cholera and other sicknesses, you know, striking the heavily populated areas of the United States and the Northeast. And, you know, people were doing certain things like, you know, is walking around with a mask, you know, a surgical mask on, going to be, you know, out of place? We've seen it done in Mexico. We've seen it done in Asia during the avian flu outbreak. Is it something that's going to happen here? You know, in the big cities, LA, San Francisco, New York, Dallas, you know, Miami, you know, where there's lots of people, and you know, you got to start wondering, yeah, maybe I should just stay home and play WoW.
And then the question becomes: does that become your way of life? You know, for example, we went to the mall today here in the suburbs of Vancouver, and I noticed, I can't help but notice, in the mall, about every 40 people you see, someone's wearing a surgical mask. And also, I couldn't help but notice there are so many dispensers for antiseptic
hand sanitizers.
Yeah, exactly. The hand sanitizers are everywhere, and once they're kind of in place, I imagine we're going to have those everywhere for the rest of our lives, don't you?
I hope not. It's, you know, it's one of the things that goes with population growth is people, you know, as populations become more mobile and more of that population, more of the world's population becomes mobile, you're going to have, you know, invariably a cross transmission of disease, illnesses, because, you know, what used to take, you know, the plague, you know, maybe a month to get over by ship, you know, now it can happen in less than 24 hours. And, you know, that's one of the arguments against what some sociologists refer to as hypermobility is, you know, it's so easy. It's so to go from one end of the planet to another that there's so many things that we haven't thought of as repercussions because of that, that were slowly creeping up on us. Not just the things like, you know, obvious things like fuel, congestion, you know, air traffic disasters, but things like disease, you know, and where you literally, you know, the national kind of governments no longer have as much control as they used to. Say, like, you know, 50 years ago, you could say, okay, everyone stops at this border, no one in and out. Now, you know, even after September 11th, they made, you know, little allowances for certain people to fly in and out. I don't know. It's one of those things where, you know, is it time to get rid of the national governments and create one overarching global, you know, new world order? I'm sorry. That's my militia rant for the day. We're coming up to the close. Randy, is there anything you want to announce about any of your podcasts that are coming in the few weeks that you want to get out there?
Oh, we've got a new episode of The Instance coming this Friday. That would be November the 6th. I am just so excited about FilmSack. It's at filmsack.com because, like I say, we're always going to be talking about a film that the listener can watch immediately in Netflix. We're always going to be pulling from the View Now films. And so it has the potential to grow a community of people who are all experiencing something sort of the way that a community of World of Warcraft players all have similar experiences at the same time. And it's just so much fun. The panel on that show, you know, Brian Ibbett from Coverville, Brian Dunaway, the just absolutely hysterical Brian Dunaway, and then that Scott Johnson guy, you couldn't have a better group of people to be cracking wise with. I feel very fortunate. But check that out at filmsack.com. I think it's going to be a lot of fun.
That's S-A-C-K.
That's correct.
All right. Just to make sure that no one gets a bad site.
exactly.
Thank you, Randy. The Instance is at
theinstance.net.
And of course, don't forget to catch up on the FilmSack. That's it for this episode of Eats Meets West. I'm Roger Chang. I want to thank Randy for joining us. Hopefully Tom will feel better by next week, and we'll have our regular East Bay Meets West Bay podcast. Until next time.